Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everybody and welcome back to Rule the Roost podcast. We're singing for England, England, aren't we, Ben Haynes? How are you
singing
doing,
the song? Yeah, good mate, really, really good. I was at the Euros final at the weekend.
All right, 11 a reef, all right.
Yeah mate, look, if you was a real fan you would have turned up mate. No, I was at the final at the weekend and absolutely loving it mate, it was quality. And now, do you know what's really crazy? Doesn't it feel like the season's just snuck up on us.
Yeah, it has, hasn't it? It's been, it's felt like it was away for so long, and now you're suddenly like, I'm good. I'm ready. It's come back at the right time as well. You know,
yeah, lovely. Like it was wicked getting to watch the Lionesses and actually having a complete sort of mental shift. You know, none of the like, because we haven't had to deal with any of the weird stuff that comes with the men's major tournaments. It's just been so uplifting and so positive. And we haven't had to do all the kind of strange transfer-y stuff as a part of it. You know how there's always, even at major tournaments, there's always like, oh, and do you think you'll be leaving X Club this summer? It's just like, just shut up. Let us all have a break for a bit.
I hadn't even thought about that.
It's been so nice.
It's a really good point because, yeah, you know, every time Kane scores a goal, it was always, oh, that'll get him on the radar of a few top clubs and that sort of thing. So if he's not on their radar already, they're not doing a very good fucking job, are they?
Yeah, literally the worst scouting departments of all time.
Have you, had a chat to your old mate, Jill Scott, yet?
Do you know what? I haven't spoken to Jill since the final.
Oh, is she airing you, mate? Is she too big time?
She's
now?
Too big time. That's it. Yeah, like since she's like decided to go like shouting "fuck off, you fucking prick" at a load of Germans. She's come too big time. Wasn't that amazing? By the way, she trended. I think like after the top ranking things were like Euros win, England win Euros, like number 7 was like, or number 6 was Jill Scott, and then underneath, you prick or something like that. It's so funny.
I think this was one of the things I found quite refreshing about it, because it's things kind of, because a lot of what you said there is very true, so I'm not like just subtly mugging you off or anything with my next point I'm about to make, but there is quite a lot of
invite
this,
me on here.
No, well, there is quite a lot of this kind of like, you know, I just, you know what I love about the women's game is that, like, you know, it's not all nasty tackles and handbags at dawn and all this sort of stuff. It's just they all seem to get along and just play. It's like, well, number one, they don't. Like, from even just the tournament I've seen, there's still a fair amount of, like, rough challenges and stuff.
Oh, plenty.
And also, like, you need that bit of needle. And so it was good to see, kind of, Jill Scott not just be like, oh, you know, not to worry, kind
steady.
Of thing. Exactly. Like, kind of getting stuck in. And, you know, like, you know, what's her name? God, this is terrible. The American striker that Spurs signed.
Alex Morgan, that's the T.
Alex Morgan with the T. Like, it wound me up, but that's great. Like, I love that shit. I love that still triggers so many people. You need that type of thing. You need to bring that needle into it.
And mate, can I do a little, like, story topper moment?
I
just on that, I actually spoke to her about the that's the tea thing.
Did you?
And we had a minor disagreement about it, which is like, as if I'm in any position to try and tell her anything about football. But, like, she basically had said that the media, she got more media attention for that in a way that she felt was unfair and that wouldn't happen to the men for doing that's the tea celebration against England, and that it was sexist. And I said, like, with the greatest of respect, given that you've won the Olympics, the World Cup, like everything there is to win, shut up. No, I said with the greatest of respect, like, given that you've won everything, I actually think, because I mean, like, you know, I've covered the women's game for what, 6-7 years, so this is coming from the right place. I actually think the biggest mark of respect that the English media could give to you is to treat you exactly how they treated you, because you riled them up, you got under their skin, you pissed people off, and you turned the English media against you in such a way that they went for you. That's what they do every single week in the Premier League. That is the biggest mark of respect that they could possibly give you, that you got under their skin and you annoyed them and you scored the winning goal on the pitch that made the difference to such an extent that they felt that they had to write about you. Like, what bigger cut through is there than that? Like, that's what it's all about.
And how did you respond to that?
Yeah, she didn't agree at all, but it was fine. It was absolutely fine, because we were doing N17 live at the time, and it was like in between a break, and she's like, nah. And I was like, yeah, cool. Thanks, Alex Morgan. Thanks for coming to my TED talk about why actually you're like completely in the wrong. She didn't go for it one bit.
It's funny. It's pretty mental, that one, because I'm never going to claim to be like an authority on the women's game, but I'm also not completely outside of it. You know, obviously I've worked on it for a few years in various different capacities and things like that, and had a passing interest in it. I've gone to watch Spurs a couple of times. I've watched England, actually. I watched them in that Germany game, the friendly, not this one.
At Wembley?
Yeah, the friendly at Wembley when it first dropped and stuff like that. So I have got a sort of passing interest in it. And it was quite mad signing like Alex Morgan, because...
Unbelievable.
Even as somebody outside that, you're like, well, this is pretty much like Spurs signing Cristiano Ronaldo in the men's game for... Like now, if we were signing him now, do you know what I mean? Towards the sort of tail end of his career... He sort of wants somebody in there. It's signing in a... I mean, that's probably not the best comparison given Cristiano Ronaldo's off-field alleged behaviour. So don't look into that any more than other than an on-pitch capacity.
Play me off, Johnny.
Yeah, but exactly, I know. God, shall I keep digging? But it was pretty mad, and it's kind of... it is good overall to see things growing into it, because, you know, you're still kind of seeing a bit on social media. It's always going to be that kind of performative level of, like, you know, ironing board memes and all that type of stuff. But I do like to think it is dying out a bit now, because I think more than anything, it's just really boring, isn't it? That sort of stuff.
Like, it's so like 80s, isn't it? It feels like that generation of people have come and got, like, you and I, we're gently aging like fine wine, but we're in that position where we're no longer in that generation of being just kids anymore. We are in the generation now that defines the attitudes of the time, I think. We're in that kind of middle group, and it's suddenly becoming really, really apparent to me, or it certainly was over the course of this tournament. I got into a cab, and the cab driver sat, and he was like, "This women's football's absolute rubbish," isn't it? And I was like, "Wow, like you're so lost." Like, he was probably mid-60s. I was like, "That is such an old school attitude." And we kind of gently corrected him that he was like in the minority as opposed to in the majority now. But it was really fascinating to think that people that are in their 30s, people that are maybe in their 40s, they would have grown up hearing people say that sort of stuff. But it's not the norm anymore. Like, it is changing. It's just the change is just coming far too slowly.
It's funny as well. Like, my dad, he's 70, and he's not... The thing is, he's not... He holds the type of opinions that you'd imagine a man in his sort of, you know, late 60s to 70s does. You know, he's probably not as up to date on a lot of things, but he's not a bigot, basically. And he sort of went from being a bit like, I'm not really asked about all this, you know, I doubt the quality is going to be as good and all that sort of thing, to by the end of it, you know, he was just like, this is brilliant, actually, it's really, really good. And he was watching it all and really sort of keeping up to date with it all and everything. And, you know, I think that's the best thing that we've seen in this tournament, is that, like, the quality has spoken for itself, I think.
That
final to me was brilliant, and I tweeted at the time, and I genuinely believe this, that it was one of the best major tournament finals I've seen in a very long time. A lot of the men's major tournament finals now are just nervy, boring kind of affairs, because nobody wants to put a foot wrong, nobody wants to kind of sort of stick their neck out. But this was like, it was open, it was end to end, other than like the last sort of 3-4 minutes of injury time where we absolutely shit-housed it. But, mean, that was brilliant. Even seeing that was just absolutely just phenomenal. Seeing England being the team that does that for once. You know?
Yeah, and also, far be it from us Spurs fans who watched Christian Gross's Spurs in the 90s to be talking about only watching quality football. Yeah, like, yeah. Get in the bin. Like, we have watched some absolute dross. I've watched Spurs have a season where the top goal scorer has had 9 goals. let's not talk about quality. No, I mean,
but this is it. It's also like in the Men's World Cup, with the greatest of respect, you know, we've seen some pretty duff, you know, the likes of New Zealand, North Korea, Costa Rica and such coming into like the World Cup who are barely sort of being competitive, you know. So let's not pretend that every single game in the Men's World Cup is absolutely highest caliber either.
100%. And also the argument that I always made, this is like I've sort of made this for years. If we only wanted to watch football because just purely because of quality, bin off the Prem, bin off the Championship, bin off everything. Get Messi and Ronaldo to assemble their dream teams and we'll just watch them every week. But the point is, you don't want to just watch it for the quality. It's all about emotional investment. And it's all like, would your dad have really come out and watched you on a Saturday morning when you were age 5 because he was impressed with the quality? He goes, no, of course not. They come out and watch you because they care. And so really, the difference maker and the reason why we all love going to watch Spurs is because you've allowed yourself to emotionally invest to such a point that it has an impact on you whether they win or whether they lose. And so that's what needs to happen with the Lionesses now. Like, that for me is the next step. Is just instead of it being about like, oh, wow, look, this could really change the game. It's actually now got to be more about, right, all eyes on the World Cup next year, which is in Australia. So, I mean, it's going to be difficult to have eyeballs then anyway because of the timings of everything. But make a rivalry with the US. Turn this into like a big sort of ding-dong, a big clash, and make it all about the personalities that are going to be on the pitch. Make it all about the people that potentially might win it for England and why they're the best in the world, and create those narratives, create those rivalries, and it can go, I mean, it will go like from not only being something that people talk about as like a great thing, they will just talk about the product. Because none of us sit here and talk about like, oh, isn't it great that the Premier League is such a massive product? Which is like, I hope Spurs like put on a title challenge this year. Yeah, you know, that's all you talk about. You don't do the kind of wider context thing. Anyway, I could bore you with this stuff all day, but it's just like it's been a really, really nice different summer in terms of the football. It's been wicked.
It's a bit of a shame that old Ash Neville didn't make the team, because I understand she had an absolutely unbelievable season for Spurs.
And do you know what? I think that's probably for Spurs. That's got to be the next thing now. It's got to be, because we had a really, really good season. I would say now it's got to be sort of pushing towards that idea of kind of a couple of marquee signings that you look at and it's like, wow. I mean, like you said, of Alex Morgan, that was a wow moment, wasn't it? It was a case of like, can you believe that we've just signed Alex Morgan? And like, from what I hear, she actually did a lot of really, really good things for the women's team off the pitch. I mean, you saw when she left, the way in which they kind of wished her well and stuff afterwards, like it looked as though she was she was an absolute kind of force of nature while she was there.
Do you have any insight into how are the transfers kind of made in the WSL? Is it the same as the men's? Is it just a transfer fee? Is it more of a US sport type trading system?
Mate, it's mad. Like, honestly, this is one of the things that I think is really quite bizarre about women's football. Not a lot of people would know, but women's football is kind of, at least in the WSL, it's only been fully professional for a few years. Like, it's only just able to stand on its own 2 feet because there was legislation passed that meant that people have to, essentially every club has to make sure that all of their playing staff are fully employed. So they're full-time pros. But because of that, before, the actual contracting system was really, really weird. People would be given a 1-year contract and that might be it. They get to the end of the year and then maybe renewed for another year, or they just move on a free and then someone might offer them a slightly improved terms deal. We're only now finally getting to a point where players are being signed up on longer term deals. And even then, they're not huge. They're not like the men's, where you might try and, realistically, when you look at someone like Harry Kane, for example, you sign him up on a 5 to 6 year deal because you're protecting your asset. And you know that in theory, if he goes off like he did, that bids coming in need to be in the region of 100, 150 million, for example. In the women's game, it doesn't work like that at all. And we're only just starting to get to a point where there's like decent transfer values being spoken about. So it'd be interesting to see what happens now, because I think a lot of it has to do with how the players are marketed. That's what I say about the personalities thing. Like, if you can make a player a personality and a cultural figure and actually have some sort of cut through, not just in the football space, but more broadly as well, I think you then get to a point where they're given longer term contracts and people are trying to tie them down at a club for 5 years. And then suddenly you get into the realms of then bigger transfer fees, which then gets more PR, more marketing, and it kind of, the cycle starts again.
It's interesting. And I guess, like you say, it is ultimately, it's just about getting kind of growing the game in terms of like just having it more envisioned, right? Even with this Euros, you know, I was sort of talking to Charlotte, to my wife, about this, and you know, we were saying that like even at the start, and Ian Wright was kind of, you know, gunning after this at the end, like these brands and that, they only jumped on right at the end, a lot of them anyway.
Oh,
you know,
mate.
You there wasn't kind of in the shops and all this stuff, you know, like you see ahead of a men's Euros, get your Doritos or your Pringles or your this or your that, and there's Harry Kane on the packet, and there's none of that yet still, you know. And it's I mean, even if it is coming from that bad place, even if they are jumping on it now after the fact, one might argue that at least they're coming to it now.
Yeah, mate, totally. But there was a really interesting discussion, sorry to long this out,
no,
there was
please.
A really interesting discussion around this the other day. So I don't know if you saw I think it was Hells, as in, like, you know, the
Golden Mead.
Yeah, and yeah. Ian Wright sort of jumped on it. It was like, pay her. And if you're going to use her name, pay her. And there was a lot of chat around what is good and what isn't good. So is it good that they've jumped on board and are actually promoting her and it keeps the discussion going? Or should they be jumping in to chuck a load of money her way? And then the kind of real tragedy of it all, and this is not me calling out any individual brands or kind of like sledging anyone, but in my experience, in the build up to the tournament, every single one of the big brands went with a wait and see approach. They waited for other people to move first. They waited for other people to invest, and they didn't really commit in a way that they should have done. And so actually, we lost out on a lot, and that will be an uncomfortable conversation for a lot of people involved in the women's game to actually have to confront. But really, this could have been twice the size that it was, because a lot of the big brands, I think, actually bottled it and didn't go all in and really try and push this. Because you watch, even with the World Cup in Qatar, which is surrounded by and clouded by so much, a lot of big brands will go headfirst into that and make sure that they have a presence on the ground in a country that is mired in so much of the kind of controversy that it is. But people didn't do it for something that was only positive, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know many people that could name a kind of like a big brand that went... That you might get away with Pepsi because they put Leah Williamson on some posters on bus stops and sides of buildings and things like that. You might get away with Nike because they did the kind of projected the images onto stuff, and Adidas made some T-shirts and things like that. But it's nowhere near what they do for the Men's World Cup, you know?
No. And it's the Women's World Cup next year, right?
Yeah, so that's literally next summer. And it was only happened this year because they had to move back the men's Euros because of COVID, so then they slid the women's Euros back.
It'll be interesting to see what the uptake for that is, but you'd imagine it will be much bigger now. You'd hope, at least, anyway. And I guess this is a pertinent time to mention as well that the Tottenham Hotspur women's first game of the season against Manchester United will be played in the stadium as well. Will you be there, Ben?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's one of those things that it's a bit chicken and egg, because a lot of people say, why don't you put the games on in the men's stadium? Like, then more people will come. And then when they put the games on in the men's stadium, or at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, then maybe it only gets 20,000, 30,000 and 62,000, and people are like, well, how do we get more people to come? And it's kind of, it is that whole thing of it being a vicious cycle. If you don't do it, then people won't know to come and support it. But I'm hoping this time around, it will mean, because of everything that's happened over the course of this summer, people will flock to it. I mean, they've announced that game, the England game against Germany at Wembley in October, and there's like a waiting list of like 30,000 people online trying to buy tickets yesterday. So clearly there's an appetite there, and hopefully having a game at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium again will drive another level of interest for Spurs, because women are doing brilliantly, man, and hopefully they can go on to another level next year.
Yeah, it should be massive. I mean, if I recall correctly, because I went to the North London derby that they did in the stadium.
Did you? What did you think? First, did you like it?
I think they didn't open the upper tier, if I recall correctly. Yeah, but yeah. It was Ramo. It's absolutely Ramo.
I think it's got the record. 37,000, I think it is. I think it's got the league-wide record for biggest attendance at a women's game, which is sick. I mean, it's awesome. It's great that we've got it, you know. And it was a really good game, that one as well. It was a really, really good game.
Although they did it again, didn't they? It's annoying. Like, it's kind of watching Spurs Arsenal in the WSL now. It's a bit of a reminder of what it was like before. You know, of being like, oh, they're actually big and scary in this league and horrible. Unlike their male counterparts nowadays.
You ready for a bit of all or nothing, are you?
Oh, mate, I was just going to move on to that. Have you been kind of soaking, basking in some of this cringy Arteta Brent type content that we're seeing sort of drip through at the moment?
I find it, I'm amazed that this is the angle that's being taken on with the kind of approach of here's how we say it's an all or nothing doc. I find that really fascinating, because with Spurs, I think if I remember rightly, and I could be completely wrong here, but I seem to remember them basing a lot of the teasers and the trailers about Mourinho, and it being kind of like about his character and his personality, and lots being sort of placed on him. Mm. And Jose Mourinho is an enormous figure within the game. Whatever anyone says about him and what happened at Spurs, in terms of his history in the game, like, unbelievable. Mikel Arteta, he's literally been around, what, Arsenal, 2 years? 3 years? Like, that's...
I think
that's
so, no. Yeah, yeah, near enough.
It's
yeah.
No time at all, really, like, to be kind of, like, pinning it on this kind of, like, my managerial philosophy is all about blah, 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 blah. And then to think... I mean, you know Harry Simeon, like, he was who does a podcast called Chronicles of a Gooner. He's a really, really great guy and one of the few Arsenal fans that I will listen to about their opinions on things. He's absolutely buzzing to watch it. And I was like, really? Like, I would be trying to avoid that, like, the plague.
If we'd have bottled fourth place like the way they did to us, there's not a chance I'm watching that all or nothing.
Mate, I couldn't be further away from it. Like, I will sit down and watch the episode that covers May... Is it like sort of April, May? I'll watch that in 4K in the highest res I can possibly get. Give me the 3D glasses. Inject it directly into me. I'm quite happy to soak up every last drop of that game at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium again, which I watched the highlights of again the other week, by the way. How good was that night?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I saw your tweet about it and then I watched it again and just kind of soaked it in as well. It's just... I was saying at the time, and I still believe it now, it's a real... I think it was a real, real crossroads for the club. I really do. Like, because, you know, there was so much uncertainty about Conte. I mean, if you even shelve that side of things, you've just had Ivan Perisic this week say, you know, the second I found out that Tottenham were in the Champions League, my decision was easy, you know?
It's a garden of forking paths, isn't it? Like, literally, we took the fork with the Champions League and they went down the other one. Like, and that could have so easily been us.
Yeah, like, the thing is, the other fork might have led to dad coming back this summer, you know, so
yeah,
you know,
challenging, you know, challenging.
Yeah. I'm not gonna kick that culture war off yet. Yeah, you know? I'm behind Antonio Conte season. Until he walks out.
You've softened.
Time.
What's happened to you? You've softened up.
What's, you know, what am I gonna do? Just, you know, dig my heels in and not board the banter bus.
You know, come I mean, on.
You got to get on board and just kind of have a laugh, haven't you? Really, because. What's the point of otherwise?
Yeah, exactly. And it helps fun at the moment.
It helps that he's fucking quality as well.
Mate, and also just the way in which we're going about stuff and when you hear what people sort of say about him. By the way, can I just... I know I've texted you this already, but I feel like I should probably say it on record. Ivan Perisic at the moment. Like, I mean, A, what a phenomenal player that we've signed. Like, he's just an unbelievable player. And B, he is the most ripped up Adonis I've ever seen.
It's unbelievable. That picture of him that he posted in his pants, like, on his Instagram. I was just like, what?
Yeah, this is, like I said to you, this is deeply troubling for me. It's challenging me a lot as a heterosexual adult male.
It was quite funny. Did you see John Bass tweeted saying, like, I hope I look like this when I'm 33. And then in my case, I'm 36. It's just
so good.
I mean, I think I'm so excited about him. I mean, not in the in all senses, but in the football sense, I'm incredibly excited about Ivan Perisic. I think he is going to be. I think he's like low key the signing of the summer. Like,
mate, you got him on a free. On a free.
Mate, the way he like bounds at the ball like that, I'm kind of seeing, you know, this. I'm not. He's definitely not on that level. Gareth Bale is one of the best players of all time, but he's like a kind of like, you know, a supermarket brand Gareth Bale, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, also that, you know, that version of Bale when he was like learning his craft and then suddenly was discovering that he was not actually super quick, but he was really strong. Like he bounces people. It drives into areas and then bounces people and is not afraid to front people up. And he cracked a shot the other day in the game against Roma from about 30, 35 yards with his weaker foot that like whistled just wide the post. I was like, I can't remember the last time that we had a left-sided wing-back or full-back that you thought maybe Christian Ziga. You thought, oh, get it out in front of you and have a crack. Like, what a blessing that's going to be this year, you know?
Christian Ziga, who I maintain, still scored one of the best North London derby goals I've ever seen.
Unbelievable.
It was like a 35-yard free kick. Maybe my childhood memory is warping that. Maybe it wasn't quite that far out. But I swear it was a very long-distance free kick.
Well, yeah, and then the other one would be Eric Edmond. Oh, do you remember that?
And the noise it makes crack. When it hits the net. Anfield to silent. You just see this like
oh, delicious.
So what is it the stanchion? Do you call it that? The bit in the back? Yeah. Oh.
And do you know the only sort of I'd say sort of one of the only better ones in the world for that sound? You know the sound it makes at Dortmund? Like I've watched back a lot of times on the Champions League run when we went away to Dortmund and then
especially when Haaland was twatting one in as well.
Oh,
you know?
My God.
But which goal is it he scored? He scored that. Was it against Real Madrid maybe when he absolutely thumped on him for Dortmund when it looked like he was going to break the net?
Sorry, and the sound of the rattle is just insane. But I remember in the game when we played them and Hugo just had one of those nights where it was unbelievable. The whole of the defensive unit was incredible. You had Jan and Toby and Ben Davis just had a stormer. But then we got that breakaway goal. And if you listen back to it, and when Harry goes clean through on goal, it sort of feeds it in, and the rattle of the net as that. I remember so vividly being like, job done. Because I thought if they had scored, and we were 3-0 up on aggregate, if they had scored and it went to 3-1, there was every chance we could capitulate. But as soon as Harry scored, I was like, nah, curtains, cheers. Right, thanks for stopping by.
I was there. I was actually at that one in New Ireland. It was pure. I mean, obviously, we had a lot of high points on that. You know, we had Amsterdam, lest we forget, Manchester City. But that one in particular, like you're saying, because there was still that kind of fear. Dortmund were like.
They had a great side.
Yeah, and they're kind of. They were like our par, really. Do you know what I mean? Dortmund,
Spurs.
Oh, my Spurs,
God, mate, do you remember?
Kind of, you know.
Do you remember in the build up to that game, you were like really. Not, I'm going to say cheesed off, but you were quite heavily frustrated by the fact that Dortmund were like the darling of football and everyone was like absolutely hyping them.
The general sort of rhetoric around that one was that Dortmund are this amazing, incredible team and Spurs will be lucky to get anything against them. I was like, well, let's have it right. Like, this is a team that for the past few years has been finishing the top four of the actual Premier League, like, you know, Dortmund still can't win the Bundesliga against Bayern Munich. We're playing against four or five different teams of like Bayern Munich's quality. So let's not get it too twisted. Like, Spurs aren't miles away from a club like Dortmund at all. So, you know, I mean, maybe they've got more recent year kind of pedigree than Spurs overall on balance, but
it was insane, though, wasn't it? The way that they tried to, that narrative was pushed. I saw you set people off again the other day by tweeting that video of like the goalkeeper, was it Onana trying to like,
yeah, I don't know,
trying to hype up the crowd.
How I'd never seen that one.
Incredible.
I had no idea how I'd never seen it, but I I came across it completely by accident. It was just like a suggested video to me on YouTube. I was looking, just watching, you know, just getting sort of excited about the season.
Is it the last 5 minutes? Is it the last 2 minutes, maybe?
Pretty much last 3-4 minutes or so.
Right.
And you see it kind of, you just see Onana sort of wasting so much time. And it really reminds me of like that game. Obviously, I was pretty heavily intoxicated on alcohol during that game, and just kind of an absolute bag of nerves. But it really does remind me how kind of little I remember of the actual flow of the game.
Totally.
You know?
Totally.
At all. Like, I don't remember any of that, like, Onana time wasting or anything like that. And I don't remember, like, the Ajax fans being that kind of, at least from the, I wasn't at the ground, but I was in Amsterdam for that one.
Yeah.
And a lot of the Ajax fans were pretty shtum. Like, you know, they were kind of like, they didn't look like they were sort of counting their chickens, but it seemed like in the stadium, you know, well, I guess of course you're going to do that in the stadium, aren't you? That's the thing, you know, of course you're going to be sort of pulling your team over the line kind of thing. And this is, yeah, we got to remember this was what, the 93rd, 94th minute that would have been taken. So you are going to be thinking like, we're on our way to a Champions League final. And do you know what, I'll tell you what it really did. Obviously, I don't care that much because it's just the greatest night of our lives, really. But just thinking about, imagine how much that hurt. Like being an Ajax fan, imagine how much. Because that sort of thing could happen to Spurs. That's the sort of thing that would happen to us.
Totally.
Do you know what I mean? And so when I was watching that, I was thinking like, oh, God, that's a nasty one.
Do you know what? It's actually a little, it's almost a little too close to home, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you watch it, you're almost like, this is actually almost a little bit much. Because you don't want to bask in it too much.
Because the thing that's quite funny about it as well, really, is that like, I think it is one of those games where they've got nobody but themselves to blame either. Like some of the defending was horrific from them as well. This is something I picked up kind of as I've watched it again. It's not to take anything away from kind of the fear, the spirit and the fight that Spurs put in that game. But Ajax really kind of fucked that one up. Like,
imagine the kind of like post-mortem that you would do if you were an Ajax fan on some of that defending. Well,
imagine, like, if that was, imagine, you know, if that's Dyer and Sanchez, you know.
Yeah, you know we would... Like, I found it hard enough to recover from the final, but imagine if we'd gone out in the semi like that. And it had been that sort of type defending. Like, I don't know how, as a fan, you kind of would be able to reconcile, like, go again the next year. Do you know what I mean? And we found it hard enough, and we got to the final.
It's funny because like Charlotte's half Dutch, and she's got a lot of family out there, who actually live in Amsterdam. And her cousin's husband Remco, he's actually an Ajax season ticket holder, and he was at the game.
Buddy.
Yeah, he was at the game, and we went round to see her Dutch family the day after the game. And I was just sort of saying to Char, like, yeah, they were all happy to see the family and everything, but I was like, man, Remco must have just been like, these are literally like the last fucking people I want to see.
Please don't bring them to my home.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. But we didn't mention it. Do you know what I mean? It was one of those, but you don't even want to do that. Oh, good game, mate. You know, because nobody wants that, you know?
Don't. I remember you saying to a friend of ours, listen, at the final, whatever happens tonight, like, just don't talk to me. Like, you don't understand, because this friend of ours is a Liverpool fan. So it's like, for you, this is another European final. To us, you don't understand what this kind of means one way or the other.
I'm pretty sure I texted him. I said, like, if you make fun of me tonight, mate, I will never speak to you again. Like, you know, and I was deadly serious about it.
For good reason. For good reason. Because it's like, it's tonight is not the night.
Yeah.
Tonight is like, say, he used save
to,
it
the,
when
the
I back can
story
it.
To this, he used to like really revel where Liverpool would beat us in sending me, like, he'd always copy and paste like one of my tweets ranting about it, and then just do that little, you know, that little dancing salt shaker gif.
Oh, like, yeah. God's sake. It like, and the thing was, is like, Liverpool, we've got a trash record against Liverpool anyway. You know, it's not like it's a shock for Liverpool to beat us. I could, like, literally, I've watched Spurs at Anfield for what 32 years. I've never seen us look.
There was something, man. I saw the stat, like, the last time, it's something like, I think we've beaten them like four or five times at Anfield since the sinking of the Titanic. You know?
Oh, man. It's so trash, isn't it? But yeah. it then means that it's like, look, listen, to us, we're going full Hail Mary territory here. Like, the fact that we're in a final was mental anyway. Like, you need to let us have this. And if you, like, stick it to us at all tonight, it's unforgivable. Like, I wouldn't be able to get over it. Thankfully, he didn't, which is good, but...
I'm so excited to be back in the Champions League. Oh, I bang on about God. This about on pretty much every single episode. I'm sure everybody's bored of hearing
why
how
not,
excited
man?
I am about the Champions League. But it might even, do you know what? It's a danger. It's very different. But I might, do you know what? I might actually prefer it to the World Cup nowadays. Tottenham in the Champions League. There's something about the World Cup. I love seeing the whole country kind of alive.
Yeah.
The pubs bustling and everything like that. But with England football, with the international tournaments, what I will say is when England lost the Euros final, I was over it the next day. Tottenham in the Champions League final, I'm still not over it.
Mate, I've got a great question for you. We did this in the office the other day. Mm-hmm. If you had to rank out of 10 the euphoria you would feel with England winning the World Cup, mm-hmm. and then had to rank out of 10 the euphoria you would feel with Tottenham winning the Champions League.
Well, Tottenham winning the Champions League is 10.
Yeah.
And so in comparison to that, I'd honestly say England winning the World Cup, 6.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I think for me it might be an 8 or something. But even still, it was only when I kind of confronted that question that I was like, oh my God. Like, if Tottenham were to win the Champions League, like, that it was so deeply intertwined with our independent personalities, characters, identities, whatever you want to call it. Like, it's such a deep part of who we are that, like, I think winning the Champions League, I just don't know. I think there, 40 years from now, you'd still catch me on YouTube or TikTok or whatever the dominant social media is at the time. If we had won, I would be watching back the highlights once every other couple of weeks.
I mean, the thing is, I'll probably still be watching the Ajax highlights even then, even knowing what came.
Yeah.
Till the day I die, you know, it's going to be one of those things.
That's probably why you're so excited for it to be back, right? Because we've now got, not only is it fun to be in there, but we've actually got pedigree. Like, we're no longer, oh, Spurs, how lucky for them to be in the Champions League. It's like, no, we're like in this competition, we've got something to dig our heels into, you know, because we always had before, like the kind of the UEFA Cup and like the Cup Winners' Cup, etc., and all the kind of the things of the past. But the Champions League is a very, very different and separate thing. And we are now, I would argue, a big side in the Champions League.
Oh, big time, 100%. It's funny because it's not even like our run to the final. I mean, yeah, it was fortuitous in that year, but we've been building up to that point, at least getting to the latter stages of the tournament. You know, I think we've made a semi, we made a quarter final, we've gotten to the second round a couple of times. Like, you know, we're not just kind of that Leverkusen or Lyon that kind of got there, or, you know, winging a prayer, got there once, had our day in the sun, and then disappeared again. You know,
No.
We're a proper like establishing. This is the thing. Yeah, okay. You know, it's been largely kind of the UEFA Cup, Europa League latterly, but we're an established European team. Tottenham are a European side. Yeah, we don't have the same kind of pedigree as a Liverpool, an AC Milan or something like that, but we're still a team that's got silverware in Europe. Arsenal don't. Arsenal are a great team, but they're not really a European team. I don't look at Arsenal and think, oh, they're a big European side, but Spurs are. The white shorts under the sort of floodlights midweek at White Hart Lane. It's what it's all about. It's one of the kind of founding pillars of the club's identity. And that's just why that's why I'm still, even when we do sort of fail to make the Champions League, I never really scoff at the idea of being in like even the Europa League. I know a lot of people don't like it. They think it takes up too much time, but I love it. I love the whole the theatre of European
Nights.
Football. It's amazing. And like, it's, to me, it's like I say, it's just such a huge part of what Tottenham are as a football club that we should never take it for granted. And it's, you know, I can't wait for it.
Also, I mean, I'm not just utilising every opportunity I have to kind of stick the boot in on Arsenal not making the Champions League, but Arsenal were a big team in the Champions League. Under Wenger, when they kind of had some of their bigger nights, I mean, when they got through to the final themselves, they had their kind of big night against Real Madrid where Henry scored. They were a big Champions League side. I mean, they even had the game when you know, Fabregas played with a broken leg against Barcelona and scored the penalty. I mean, they feel so far from that right now, and we are so in the sweet spot of of being in that mold at the moment because of reaching it this year, it's like it makes it all the more special. I just can't, hearing that music again under the lights, all white kit, like you said, and with the team that we've got at the moment, mate, as well, and the depth that we've got, like, suddenly you're like, Jesus, we can actually have a good crack at everything.
Do you know what else is quite delicious, mate? Is for because what you say is completely true, but I think it was what 10 seasons they finished in the Champions League and we didn't ahead of us yet. You've gotten to the final just as many times as little old Tottenham, exactly. Lads. Just as many times. But that's it. It's on another level for a club like Liverpool. But I still think, I think we've seen it. We've seen it kind of in the Redknapp era. We've seen it kind of under the Pochettino kind of times, a couple of times, that there is still something about Spurs in Europe where I do think we've got a bit of an extra kind of gear that a lot of clubs don't have. And whether that's because, like I say, because we talk about club DNA and things like that, whether it's because it is just so enshrined in our DNA that, you know, without European football, this club is nothing. You know, it's like we just, it's a part of us. It's, we love it, you know, and that's, maybe that does give us that kind of extra push that a lot of clubs don't have.
Defo.
I love it. I love it. 100%. Speaking of, I mean, it would be an interesting one. We sort of played a kind of almost a Europa League lower Champions League group game against Roma the other day. I know it was only a pre-season friendly. I wasn't, to be honest. I've got that side of me where, you know, the emotional side, I never like to see Tottenham lose. I just don't like, you know,
I don't like it.
I know it's a pre-season friendly, it doesn't mean anything, but there's also levels of not liking it. And, you know, really in truth, not that arsed about losing a pre-season friendly. A lot of people seem to be quite annoyed about it, but that's just kind of, what Twitter's like. God. But do you think Conte was secretly annoyed losing to Mourinho?
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Yeah, possibly. The thing that I took away from it, though, which is, like, I mean, again, I don't want to come off snarky or like I'm being an arsehole unnecessarily, but I watched Roma and they put 11 behind the ball in a pre-season friendly and tried to literally see, they tried to see out a 1-0. And this is like a nothing game. And that's what you want to do for 90 minutes. I just... My overarching takeaway from that, to keep it positive, is thank God Antonio Conte is our manager going into this season. You know, I know watching those two teams, which manager I'd like to have in our dugout, you know, and it's Antonio Conte every day of the week. And it's annoying that we lost that one. But I have to say the Rangers game, I thought, was such a good test. Physically, because they're obviously a week ahead, like you said on the pod last week, a week ahead of us. And we got, for 60, 70 minutes, we got a real Premier League game. You know, it felt like a Prem game. And the way that we had to kind of like problem solve and overcome it and make sure we got the win to me, it had that. Do you remember we always used to do a home game right before the beginning of the season?
Yeah.
And it was usually against like Roma or Sevilla or whatever. And I remember there was one year that David Bentley scored from like 25, 30 yards. And we were like, oh my God, we've got the next Beckham. But that to me, the Rangers game felt like it should have been the final game before the season started. That was like perfect. You know, we'd gone and done the tour. We're back on semi-home soil. We're now ready for the season started. It almost felt like to then go away. Again, I understand the obligations that we have and how good it is for the club to be seen on the international stage and kind of people seeing them all over the world. And they do some amazing work while they're out on the tours. It's just that you then have to kind of like pick yourself up and go again for another international trip, and you've just been away for kind of 10 days or wherever it was. I'm not too fazed by the Roma game at all. I'm sure Conte secretly will be sitting there being like, because I was listening to you and Ricky last week, and you were talking about their kind of interaction, Conte and Mourinho's, and one of the things that you left off, and I was screaming, I was listening to it in the car, screaming at the radio, I was like, please say it. It was Conte's quote, he's a little man in the past, he's a little man now, and he'll be a little man in the future. And I was like, yes, so good. But that will be the only part of it, I think, that will bother him, will be losing to Mourinho. I don't think I'll be too concerned about the way the team performed, because we should have had that. Two penalties, and we had some sketchy offside calls as well. I'm not too fazed. I don't know. What about you?
It might be. This is probably a bit of a Brinty management speak type approach to things, isn't it? But you kind of feel as well, like if you've got a bit of a mixed bag of pre-season results, you're going to learn kind of a lot about the team, and you're going to be able to already throw up situations where, yeah, we always know that we struggle against low block teams, right?
Yeah.
And we struggled again against a low block team. So it's looking for solutions in that kind of, you know, in that type of game. And yeah, okay, we didn't seem to find any on this occasion, but hopefully, you know, it's provided some food for thought and something that we can kind of, because, you know, there ain't going to be, now with old Sean Dyche out of a job for now.
There's one less, isn't it?
Exactly. You're not going to find many more masters of the kind of low block shit house in than you are Jose Mourinho, you know?
Has anyone done enough in pre-season for you to turn around and you be like, you are there on match day one?
I might stick my neck out and say Harry Kane.
No, I mean more in the sense like if anyone from the Norwich game So we finished with the Norwich game. The only slight change was that I think Romero was still injured. Is there anyone that we've bought that's done enough in pre-season to be like, okay, you can nick someone's spot?
I mean, I don't know if it's just about in pre-season or not, but I mean, Perisic is there, right?
Yeah, like, I agree. Totally.
He's just, I think it'd be naive to think he's anything other than already one of our very best players.
Right? Yeah, totally.
He's a world-class footballer, so he's got to be in there, and I think it's good for Sessegnon to have somebody like him to learn from. We've already heard that he's doing that. I will be interested to see what happens. I would guess it's going to be Doherty that he's going to start with. Because, you know, I don't know, people sort of digging out Romero a bit in pre-season, and I don't think that's, yeah, I'm not saying the opinions of people on Twitter are going to be influencing Antonio Conte. I just mean it more as in, like, the thing I find about Romero is that I've watched him play so many times now, and I still don't really feel like I've got a proper handle on, like, how good
do you mean Emerson? Emerson Royal?
Yeah. Have I said Romero again?
Yeah.
The amount of times I've done it, mate, I'm such a fucking David Pleat on this. Emerson Royal.
That's Pascal Chibamba.
Oh, mate. I've got to get my head shut, because I'm digging out like one of our best players constantly. People go, yeah. why is this mug keep digging out Romero? He's absolutely quality.
Yeah.
No, but let me just get this completely right. Christian Romero, I think, is probably going to be considered one of the best centre-backs in the league,
undeniably,
if not in Europe this season.
Totally.
The lad is absolutely phenomenal. Emerson Royale, I'm not so sure.
He's very, like, the thing with Emerson is that it feels like a lot of what he's doing, it feels like he has to try so hard to get it right. You know, sometimes you just see those players who are just naturally beautiful on the ball. You know, they kind of, every time they strike the ball, they caress it. John Arnarisa, for example, one of those players that just, like, they don't sort of roll the ball, they stroke it, you know. For him, it doesn't come, I don't think it comes that naturally. He doesn't look like someone that when he gets into an advanced area, you think he's just going to get this one out of his feet and absolutely whip it. And because of that, I think it makes it harder to actually kind of take on board how productive he is. And I'd argue that actually Doherty put himself in a position at the back end of last season where, before the Villa game, where he got clattered so unnecessarily. It was such an unnecessary challenge to smash his knee in like that. before that, he'd started to establish himself in such a way that to me, it wasn't even a discussion anymore. I don't know whether that was the same for you.
No, yeah, he started to look really very, very good.
Very functional, wasn't he? Like very efficient in that role.
And he's clearly a really good element. I mean, both players are very good elements in the kind of changing rooms by the looks of things. So, I mean, I don't know if you sort of think it was Alistair Gold was saying that there's no rush to sell either of them. You know, there's been this kind of talk all summer of like, who's going to make way? Are we going to get rid of Doherty or Royale? But
I don't know, Matt, if people probably do know this, but Matt Doherty's very close with Harry Kane. And so from that point of view, even if you're just kind of talking about team camaraderie, team building, etc., like it's good to keep your best player fundamentally. It's good to keep them happy as well. So even aside from the fact that Doherty is probably at the moment our best right wing back, he's also best mates with our best player.
You're saying he's the new Tom Carroll?
Yeah, exactly. Gone through quite a few now, haven't we, of these kind of like friendships where you're like, oh no, they're keeping each other happy, and then they end up moving on. It's always fine anyway, because at the end of the day, they're professional footballers. But it is always nice, I think. Like, I always go back to that bit in the All or Nothing with Us where Christian Eriksen's sort of watching Sky Sports News, and he sort of makes that joke that Harry Kane is like, yeah, that's like, someone's going for like £50 million, and he's like, yeah, that's like one of your legs, Harry, to him. And then Harry's like, oh yeah. And Ben Davies sort of like gently chuckles. You just like, that's the most gentle table in terms of banter that I've ever seen in my life. Just those three just sitting together, mildly ribbing each other. It's just really nice.
I'll tell you what wasn't nice, mate, seeing Christian Eriksen in a Man United kit. And I didn't think I'd be... I didn't think it was going to be pleasant, don't get me wrong, but yeah. I didn't think I'd be that arsed. But then seeing it, I was like,
nauseating.
This is a bit grim, actually. Like,
it's the colour, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's just also something like patronisingly like comfortable about seeing Dele go to Everton, but like seeing Christian Eriksen go to a club where he might like do something significant in a game against us, you're just like, mate.
That's a good point. I never even thought about it like that. I hadn't even allowed myself to think about it like that, that it might be that when we play them, like, because you know when he was at Brentford and we gave him that lovely ovation in the corner, and you were like, oh well, that's nice, because we're bigger than Brentford, you know, like with United, you're right, there'll be a level of discomfort there, won't there, when he's standing over a corner and like someone makes that
probably not a corner, but
I was gonna say we'll all make that joke, won't we, like, oh, let's see if you beat the first man, and then he caresses it into the 6-yard box and he gets headed in by Marcus Rashford. Like,
why have you put that out into the universe?
I'm literally talking it into action now. Do you know what
you're manifesting?
Like,
it
it's like betting against your own team. Just so you're always covered. You always say, I knew this was going to happen anyway.
That's going to be the FA Cup semi-final, isn't it?
No. Do you remember when we went to that one?
Do you remember when we went to that?
So that was one of the worst experiences I've ever had.
Because we were so good at that point. I remember going into that game, like, we're going to win this. And then I just remember turning up at Wembley and suddenly there was just a funny whiff in the air of like, actually, Tottenham against Manchester. I know they're Banter United now, but... it's still Man United at Wembley, the team we've all grown up seeing win basically everything. And it just felt like we'd suddenly shriveled. We suddenly carried that, didn't we? Of like,
it was weird. Was it Herrera who scored the second one?
I can't remember. But
and it went through someone's legs.
I remember it mostly for like Moussa Dembele. It was almost like kind of the death of Moussa Dembele in a way, you know. Like,
gave it to Pogba, didn't he?
We didn't even give it to him, mate. He just got completely mugged off for it.
Like, never seen him dispossessed like that.
No, it was hot. It was horrible. It's always stuck out for me. I remember a game against Norwich at home, and Ledley King, it was sort of toward the tail end of his career, and it was kind of that point when it was so uncomfortable just seeing like, yeah, he's done now, he's struggling. What was that horrible striker that Norwich used to have? Bradley Johnson, was he called? Big horrible shithouse player.
I think I know who you mean.
Yeah, Bradley Johnson, and he gave Ledley King a torrid afternoon, if that's who I remember correctly. And it was just uncomfortable to watch. It was horrible to
watch. Yeah, someone that's so special to you as well. Yeah. It's like that story of Gary Neville, you know, when he said that he was at West Brom and he was sitting on the toilet and was like, I've got to retire now at half-time. he said he got done so badly away at the Hawthorns that at half-time he went to take a dookie and was like, and he was like, nah, enough's enough. But Alex...
Well, I mean, you do some good thinking on the shitter, to be fair. You know?
Like... it's really nice me time, isn't it? I mean, yeah. I know, like, not to lower the tone too much, but I remember you and I having conversations about this a lot, that it's really, like, it's one of the few places in the world that you get total me time now.
Sanctuary, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Some of your most creative thoughts there.
Oh, big time, big time. Some of the, you know, like, Spurs wipe, you know, it wasn't the only wiping going on when I was thinking about most of that. You know what I mean? Like, that's...
Is that why you've retired from Spurs? Right, you dropped it and then thought that sitting on the shitter, that's it, no more.
No more shitting.
I can't believe Ricky is so right. I can't believe that you've said that Spurs wipe is no more. I was kind of hoping there might be, like, I don't know, one more of them in you, or like one more that you might just be like, oh, go on, I'll just give it a go.
I might, you know, it's one of those things. But
when you get the itch,
maybe. But it's more kind of, 2020 was a different year. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot more kind of, you know what it's like doing these type of jobs. You're back and forward, you're editing all the time, and then the last thing you really want to be doing is kind of, right, I'm going to sit and film and edit more stuff now in my kind of free time, and also what free time you have. Like, you know, in 2020, nobody was allowed to leave their houses or anything like that, you know, and there's only so much Netflix you can watch and whatever. So, yeah, kind of it just lent itself to it. And I guess kind of the overall mood of everything felt like it would be more accepting of it at that time, you know.
I'm
not 100% it would be quite like that anymore. Kind of, I mean, this is something I wanted to talk to you about actually, really, because it feels like I'm really sort of pumped about this season, right? I feel like we've done some really good business. We've added some great players. Yeah, all right. People sort of are intent on saying it's not a 10 out of 10 window, but, you know, like, just grow up a bit, you know? Like, you can't just be like, oh, it's a crap window because we didn't add, or yet, anyway, at the time of recording, we didn't add an £80 million centre-back or a £60 million creative attacking midfielder. You know, it's not how football works. Like, you see Chelsea. Yeah, Chelsea signed a couple of centre-backs, but... You know, a lot of their fans aren't happy with their window. Manchester United fans aren't overly happy with how their window's gone. You know, you can keep kind of going through this. And I know you want to sort of be looking at your own team, but we have objectively made some very good signings. And we've got a very good manager. We've got a manager that turned a team that hasn't even got half the talent that it's got now into a team that was in sort of, you know, top three form. So I don't see what there is to be unhappy about. But I guess sort of my long-winded point is, like, do you think some of this could be a consequence of the fact that we did just get our business done really early? We did it really efficiently. We've given them the kind of the summer with Conte that everybody's banged on about. But since we've done that, it seems that people aren't happy with that now.
Yeah, well, the gamification of the transfer window is one of the worst things to ever happen to football. It's really quite frightening the way in which... not only people sort of speculate, talk about transfers, etc. now, but the fact that you no longer have to look at it as getting hold of players that are fit for purpose. It's actually just about who can get the shiniest new toy and the most expensive thing. And then once you get the most expensive thing, you have to immediately be mugged off for spending money. Like, it's so strange. I find the whole thing completely bizarre. I noticed that, like, Spooky's sort of gone into bat a few times for Spurs' transfer window, and I've got enormous admiration for him for doing it, because it's literally thankless, the idea of saying anything positive about the way that Spurs have operated, which is crazy to me, because we all know how good it was at the beginning of the transfer window. And the main thing for me is, like, have we gone out there and got hold of people who are fit for purpose in the positions that we need that strengthen our team significantly, strengthen our squad, sorry, significantly? And the answer to, like, every single one of those is absolutely yes. So we needed a backup for Harry Kane. We were all worried about Harry Kane. But what if he gets injured? What if he can't play every single minute of every game? Which he can't. Cool, we've got Richarlison. We needed another dynamo in midfield that's able to carry the ball. Great, well, we brought in Bissouma. And we're now in a position where we've got Skip, Bissouma, Bentancur and Højbjerg. Oh, we need a world-class or an elite-level left wing-back. OK, we went out and got Perisic. Like, we got Longley as someone to challenge Ben Davis. Like, the thing that's bothering me is that I feel like people have lost sight of what's important, which is being able to manage 60 games in a season. Like, there's no denying that Spurs have got, in terms of the starting 11, one of, I would say, the top three starting 11s in the league. Like, we're behind City and Liverpool, fine. That's absolutely fine. Like, but because we've shown that on our day, we can still do them over. Last season, we had four very good games against those two sides. But what people seem to forget is that where we come unstuck is when we get to that point where players are having to run themselves into the ground. And you've got a player like Sonny, who's unbelievably good, world class, but occasionally might just need to have 5 minutes rest. Do you know what I mean? Like, we haven't been in a position to do that because we've never had the depth of squad to be able to do that, or certainly not in recent history. And now it looks like Conte's working the players to that point where they're in like just incredible levels of fitness. It's so crucial to be able to play in the same way week in, week out, whether that be in the Champions League or in the Premier League. For me, the business that's been done is bang on the money. Of course, if someone said, oh, would you like to have another player that walks into our first team and we go and just drop 50, 60 million on them, maybe, I don't know, like a top left-sided centre-back to come in, yeah, well, of course you take it. But I don't know why anyone is turning their nose up at what we've done. It's like you said, it's recency bias and it's this tragic thing of kind of like needing the shiniest toy right now. God forbid you have like someone that was signed a week ago. You need to consistently be signing people all the time, otherwise it's not enough. It's just so strange, isn't it?
I do also think, you know, on a certain level, I do think like a lot of Spurs fans are just a bit rattled by like how good Arsenal have looked in pre-season.
Do you reckon?
I think it's kind of just that, and you've just got to kind of switch off from that shit, man, because Spurs have looked amazing in pre-seasons before and had, I think it's our 2 points from 8 games season was, you know, the Roma game you're talking about. I think we beat them like 5-0 with David Bentley.
Yeah.
We looked unbelievable. Mate, unbelievable.
I've watched Giovanni Dos Santos tear it up in pre-season. Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure, right, Arsenal might be good, but as I keep saying on here, Arsenal don't have Kane, they don't have Son, they don't have Romero, they don't have Hugo Lloris. Like, they're not that good. Like, they're good. I think they're moving in a sort of positive direction for them, but that's not what Tottenham should be worrying about right now. Like,
we're clear of them.
We're like, worrying about capitalising on Chelsea now. That's who we've got in our sights, you know?
Literally, Arsenal are challenging to try and be in the top four. Spurs are going to be the best of the rest outside of City and Liverpool. And to start to bridge that gap, which was last year, was 18 points between Chelsea and Liverpool. This year, it needs to be less than that. And it needs to be Spurs that's third and not Chelsea.
Delicious. I guess just very, very briefly, mate, because I don't want to hold you for too much longer. Match day. Yeah, we cannot avoid this. The first game of the season is just on the horizon. I've just enjoyed talking to you so much, mate. We've not really even spoken about the game that's coming up.
I literally took us off to some horrible places.
But it's great, mate. It's great, you know, and it's kind of, you know, sort of the way I've cultivated this pod, really, in a way, because it's more fun to have conversations like this, I find.
Oh, mate, I love it. Absolutely love it. But no, I am buzzed for this weekend. Absolutely buzzed.
Just from your sort of perspective, your capacity and everything, what's it look like for you a match day? Because I thought that might be quite interesting to have a little insight into how that goes.
So, do you know what? I've never really thought about that. But it is quite a cool experience to get in there on match day and see the stadium come alive. Because I'm doing sort of the N17 live shows, I think, I'm not 100% sure, so please don't fire me, Spurs, if anyone's listening to this and I've given out the wrong information. But I think it's going to be on Spurs Play this year, N17 Live, so that like you can get, we can go a little bit deeper on it, and people that have obviously signed up for Spurs Play get a little bit more exclusive content, etc. But basically, I rock up a few hours before the game, And on the first day of the season, I always make a point. I've done this kind of like, I did this for the last three seasons almost. So the project restart and then the two seasons starts four. I always make a point of going in and just kind of like wandering around the stadium when it's empty. Like just having a little loop around and going into some of the different sections of the stadium where there's going to be either like the flags or there's going to be a TIFO and just kind of soaking it up, because it sounds like a really weird thing to say, but I know that you felt this before when we went to do the documentary we made with the Proud Lily Whites, I think it was maybe, or perhaps when we went back, I can't remember what it would have been in, but it's almost something like sort of weirdly calmly spiritual about going and seeing the stadium quiet before the storm.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
It's so strange. But on a, like, it's one thing when you go for like a stadium tour or whatever. It's another thing on match day when you know that in 4 or 5 hours the whole thing's going to come alive and suddenly it's going to be fever pitch. Like, do you remember, were you there for the City game last season where we won 1-0?
The Nuno game, yes, I believe I was. I can't remember.
And there was like the flags. Everyone was waving flags at the beginning of the game and the whole place was just like, it was incredible. Like, it was so good.
I wasn't at that game, actually. Funnily enough, my first game post-COVID was... And I'm sorry, I know people say COVID's not over. I'm just saying that...
No, but the lockdown...
The main part of it, exactly. Yeah, it was... ironically, it was Conte's first game, that European game, but I hadn't booked it.
Oh, mate, the full Spurs experience.
Yeah, I booked it ages before that, and then suddenly, right, I'm getting Conte's first game. Nice, that's pretty cool.
Do you want to know a fun fact on that, by the way? Yeah. That game, they had, because obviously in midweeks, you've got to apply, essentially, to put 62,000 people in the stadium. No, it was. I can't even remember who was against. Can you remember who was against?
It was a Dutch team, wasn't it? Was it Vitesse?
Was it? I can't... That shows how bad my memory is. I'm clearly getting very old. But basically, because we didn't know Conte was going to be in the dugout, I don't think they had applied to the full capacity of the game.
No, we hadn't. The top tier was shut off.
Like, yeah, so it was like 30,000 people there. But it then became like the best ticket going. Do you know what I mean? You suddenly had a ticket to Conte's first game and it was this... unbelievable ding dong.
I was in the south stand as well, all of it, you know what I mean? And I think tickets were tenner or something like that, you know.
Mate, this season south stand like fully standing as well, isn't it? Like actually permitted standing, which will be incredible.
Yeah,
like just amazing, like absolutely amazing. And I suppose the other thing for this week that I'll be looking out for is the fact that the back end of last season the atmosphere was so good at the stadium. You're kind of hoping that we just carry on where we left off.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like there's a lot of pressure on this season, right? But I'm kind of enjoying it. It's nice to be back here. Like, I think times like this, you've just got to embrace this because past couple of years have been pretty boring. You know, we've kind of just been a middle of the road side, just hoping to get into Europe, really. Now we're a Champions League team that, if you know, we play our cards right, and I kind of feel that Liverpool and City might be in the transitionary periods that they're in. I don't see why there's no reason that Spurs can't also be in the mix for having a really, really special season. You know, and I honestly truly believe that. I'm not just trying to pump the feeling for the sake of it and getting ahead of myself. I really think there's something quite special going on at Spurs, and it could be something to remember. But there's no point being scared. There's no point being scared of the Arsenal fans and what they might say if we don't do it. If we just live it, just enjoy it. It's what fucking football's supposed to be about. This culture of kind of being scared of being hopeful about your team's prospects is totally, to me, like, there's always been a bit of like kind of anxiety, oh, don't jinx it. I get that. But I think it's so heightened now because of social media.
Yeah.
That you just got to let it go a bit, because at the end of the day, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? Like, literally, the worst thing that's going to happen, I mean, the worst thing that could happen is that Tottenham could get relegated and Arsenal could win the league. But in reality, Spurs actually don't do that well this year. We finished sixth. Arsenal finished top four. And we just get some of the memes and stuff that we've done to them all summer. Oh, but then we go again. And
what's the point,
it?
Like you said? What is the point in allowing yourself to go this deep on supporting your club? And then when it gets good, not just buying into the idea of surrender and just letting every single part of you just be completely overtaken by whatever happens on the day. Like that I think we go into this weekend and I think we'll probably pump Southampton. I think the atmosphere will be incredible. I think that the players will be chomping at the bit to get out on the pitch. Suddenly as well, there's competition for places. So imagine you're one of those players that suddenly has seen an exciting player come in over the summer and thinking, I need to prove that I deserve a spot in this starting lineup. Think about Kulusevski, for example, who has now gone on to like this ridiculous level, and he's suddenly got to prove that out of the three of them, it's not him who should be dropped if Richarlison was to get game time. I think he's going to fly this season. I think even just like you look at the midfield, suddenly Bentancur and Højbjerg have got to go on a level because they're being challenged by Bissouma. Like all of these things, to me, it's not a case of you should go, like, oh, well, what if this doesn't happen? What if we don't quite make it? Like, allow yourself to just believe a bit and dream a bit, because for the first time in a long time, it feels like we're going into a season just with literally nothing in the way. It's just a case of go out there and be the best version of ourselves, and maybe this season is our season.
And let's be honest, led by a man who ain't going to be saying to them, come on, lads, we might finish top four this year. We're led by a man that's said himself, I don't come here to finish top four and stuff.
No.
I want to win the league. And he's going to be drilling that into every single one of those players. We looked dead in the water last season. I didn't think for a second that even Antonio Conte was going to get us to finish top four. But the turnaround in that final quarter of the season was absolutely remarkable. And it was unlike anything I've seen since the peak days of Pochettino. A grit and a determination that Tottenham could get results over the line. And it's filled me with so much faith going into this year that we're not just going to be a team, we're not going to be doing it kind of half measures. We're a team that's going to be going out there to try and win the league.
Oh, mate, Saturday, 3:00. Can't beat it. I literally have like, I so hope that they buy into everything that you just said around Conte. Like, because if they, like, if the players show it and the fans show it, there's no reason why it can't be, like, I'm just going to sit there on Saturday and bask it in. And if we get off to a flyer, watch the narrative start to just gently teeter towards, hang on a second, are Tottenham in this? It'd be amazing.
Do you think, you know, like Arteta did with that photographer, do you think there's any chance that Conte will get me in, a podcaster, to come and give a team talk to all the lads?
Imagine. Oh, man, I'm so excited for this weekend. Like we said at the top, it does feel like there's been this perfect little bit of a breather, a little bit of breathing space, which has allowed you to kind of refocus and get excited again about what this season's going to be. I'm so desperate for it to go our way for once.
Tottenham winning Champions League is 10, and so in comparison to that, I'd honestly say England winning the World Cup, 6.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.